නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing several suttas which are related to mental proliferation or conceptual proliferation. Because this is one of the very important aspect of the Vipassana meditation. So as we are developing Vipassana meditation, actually we have to experience some amount of reduction in mental proliferation. Mental proliferation, there's a Pali term called papancha. So this papancha has to be gradually subsided, gradually uprooted, so that mind become more and more calm, silent, serene, still, and peaceful. Now, therefore, papancha vupasama or nippapancha are certain other terms even used for nibbana. So, nippapancha is a synonym for nibbana. So, you can understand how important it is to calm down this unnecessary thinking, obsessive thinking, too much thinking, going on and on. Overwhelmed by various type of thinking, so all those types of ruminations are, we can consider as papancha, as conceptual proliferation. Now today we hope to discuss another sutta which also highlights the importance of the reduction of mental proliferation, and this sutta is available in Anguttara Nikaya. Anguttara Nikaya, as you know, that is the numerical discourses put together, and therefore it is called, in this particular sutta is coming under the sixth category, where there are six factors or six important points are highlighted. Now probably you can remember that we discussed Madhupindika Sutta, in which the genesis of the prapancha or conceptual proliferation is introduced. So there are various six types of sense organs, and their corresponding outside elements. Say for example, for eye, the forms, ear, the sounds, nose with the smells, tongue with the taste, body with tactile sensations, and mind with mental objects. So when we are dealing with our senses, and they are subjected to various impingements, and it can induce some amount of mental proliferation. Now it seems like in this sutta, Venerable Sariputta highlights there are six kinds of ways which are quite detrimental to one's spiritual life, and as a result of that he is not able to have a good death. So typically we are so concerned about the death, and we hope that we are going to have a good death, and we wish to have a good death, kind of a noble type of a death, without much struggle, or not going to the lower realms. So it's a, in a way, we have some sort of an innate kind of a desire to have a peaceful death. Now in this sutta, Venerable Sariputta highlights what has to be conducted in order to have a peaceful death. And on the other hand, if one conducts the opposite, he mentioned that one would not have a peaceful death, a good death, a noble death. So here actually he has highlighted six points. And if we are able to maintain these six points, consider these six points and arrange our lives or prepare our lives according to those, then actually we can have a good death. So therefore, the point here is that we can't actually control the moment of the death, because it is very vulnerable situation, and we are also in a extremely unexpected kind of a moment, and therefore we don't know where we are going to die, we don't know how we are going to die, and again we don't know when we are going to die. So therefore that particular moment is out of our control, almost like. But the point is, before that, while we are living, we can live in a way which is conducive to have a good death. So that is the point of this sutta. So what is the way of proper living which will ultimately result in a good death? So let us go through these 6 points one by one, which Venerable Sariputta is explaining. So here Venerable Sariputta mentioned, first of all, the 6 kind of causes which are detrimental to the situation, and the other opposite side is also mentioned, those are beneficial to maintain, so that one would be able to have a good death. The first one is, he mentioned, if someone is too much delights in various types of work, then he is fairly involved in those work, therefore he may not have enough time to dedicate for his own welfare, to his own spiritual life. So as you know, if you want to have some amount of mindfulness practice, you need to dedicate some time, because it is your time. Typically, we may be engaged with various activities like office activities, maybe children's activities, neighbor's activities, social responsibilities, etc., etc. So when are we going to have time for ourselves? So that is also an important point. So if we are not taking care of ourselves, if we are not dedicating enough time for our own spiritual practice, then ultimately we are the ones going to suffer. Now in this situation, having too many work, in Pali it is called Kamma Ramata. So there are certain people, they want to have one work after the other. So they can't simply take a rest. They don't know how to have a kind of a rest. So even if they have a holiday, so they are arranging something. Assume that you got a holiday from your workplace, but you can't simply stay at home, you can't simply stay, say, developing mindfulness or such kind of an inner capability, inner skill. Rather, you arrange something else so that you are occupied, you feel occupied. So this mentality to having some sort of various kinds of work, so many amount of responsibilities, make our mind occupied, make ourselves quite responsible, and mind is filled with too much planning because so many works are to be carried out. So as a result of that, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, if one has that Kamma Ramata, the delight in too much of work, involved with too many work, that is a kind of way that one would not going to have a peaceful death. And on the other hand, he mentioned the opposite. If one does not delight in work, does not take delight in work, is not devoted to delight in work, so that is the quite opposite. Where one understand, okay, this is the amount of responsibility I have to have. This is the amount of work I have to undertake. So this is my capacity. These are my limitations. So these are the worth, say, obligations I have to fulfill. So likewise, if you know what is the amount of work that you have to carry out, and you are not going to go and ask for work from someone else, but you are only conducting what is assigned to you, then you are maybe having some amount of peace of mind, and again you can do what is assigned properly. Because when you have so many works entangled, then it is very difficult to have enough attention to each and every work, because so many things are there to attend. But when you have a limited amount of work assignments, then actually you can pay enough attention, you can do it properly. So that is also there. So therefore, if he doesn't have a mentality that I always have to occupy myself, I always have to do something, so that doing kind of an attitude, it's a kind of a syndrome, we can say, kind of a doing mentality. Always we want to do something, always we want to do something. So that mentality is quite detrimental. So if you have such kind of a mentality, so Venerable Sariputta mentioned, it's very difficult to have a peaceful death. If you know the necessary amount of work, the limit of the work, and you do it properly, and after completing that, then you may be able to have peace of mind. It is not necessary, it is not a must to have too many work. So that is the point highlighted here. And then second, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, he delights in talk. Bassa Ramata. So there are other people, I mean, if they don't have much to do, they start talking. Either they ring using a telephone and start to chatter, or nowadays we have, say, WhatsApp, using that you are chattering, and then you have Skype, using that you are chattering, and then Zoom is also there, now you can use that, you can talk with others, and if not, you can watch a movie and occupy yourself, and you can write a letter, you can read a newspaper. So much of different types of communication is available. And still you can go to the internet and browse so many things. But in the good old days, they only had the way of talking. That's the only way of communication. But nowadays, people have so many other ways of communication. So they are fully occupied with communication. So you can see how many, what you call this social media apps are available. And again, how much mass media is available. So likewise, people want to get occupied. They want to have so many information filled in their mind. So we have that tendency. I mean, if you have some free time, so you want to browse the internet, you want to talk with someone, you want to write a letter, you want to read a book, you want to read a newspaper. So many things are there. So that is also detrimental. Because you have that kind of an urgency coming from the kind of an urge coming from the mind that you want to do something again. You want to read, you want to talk, you want to write. So, but on the other hand, if one doesn't have such thing, he does not delight in a talk, and does not take delight in talk, is not devoted to delight in talk. Now, say for example, if you are attending a meditation retreat. So typically, it is mentioned that you have to maintain noble silence. Because once you are developing mindfulness, so if you continue to talk, then whatever the energy that you are able to gather, so that start to dissipate. And your mental energy start to dissipate because you are talking. So therefore, this talking is something quite detrimental. So we should know what is the exact amount of talk, or when to talk, what is proper to talk. So likewise, the talking is something that very important resource that we have, skill we have. But if we don't know how to handle it, then we are in trouble. And therefore people are wasting a lot of time in idle chattering. So therefore I think you can understand that there's a separate precept called Sampappalapa Veeramani. So we have to avoid idle chattering, useless chattering. And if one is able to avoid such useless chattering, then you have some time for yourself, because there is no one to talk, and you are not delighted in talking, but rather you are happy with being silent. So that is a kind of a skill that we need to have, we need to develop. So if one is have to have such kind of a skill where you are appreciating the inner silence, appreciating the kind of quiet environment, quiet, say, peaceful mind, so then that is something Venerable Sariputta mentioned, which is causing a peaceful death, a sublime kind of a death. And then thirdly, he mentioned another point, delight in sleep. So you can see how many different ways that we are trying to occupy ourselves. So some people are there, so they are going to the opposite. So rather than engage with so many things, instead they do the opposite. They simply continue sleeping. They don't wake up early and they sleep until the day. So likewise, they are spending so many hours in sleeping and they don't have enough energy to start something. They don't have enough energy to continue what is assigned. They are quite lazy and lethargic. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, so this is also another factor where you are going to have a lower type of a death. But on the other hand, if one is energetic, only sleeps to the necessary amount, and then he is managing his time. Because if we consider our lives, so we only, say, living, say, 60 years, 70 years, then with that, many years, half of the time is almost very much like we are spending for sleeping. But if we are sleeping too much, and even during the daytime if we are sleeping, then actually we are not going to properly manage our time, not going to use our time properly. So as a result of that, we are not able to fulfill our spiritual goals. So therefore, when Venerable Sariputta mentioned here, if one is delighted in sleep, that he is not going to have a peaceful kind of death. But on the other hand, if one is able to, have only the necessary amount of sleep, he is able to have a good death. Fourth point, delight in company. Now, here some people are there, so they want to have so many friends, so many companions. So they want to have a big crowd. Say for example, if you are a kind of popular figure, then you might like to have so many people, so many followers, so many devotees, so many disciples. So different attitudes are available in people's mind. So having a kind of a many followers, many devotees, so many say companions, many friends. So there you have to attend to everyone's needs, and you become sometimes responsible for their questions, their situations, and you have to engage with so many activities. So these are fairly connected in a way, and again you have to communicate with them, then you have to spend a lot of time in talking, and there are a lot of work involved with them, and you have to engage with those work. So all are getting sort of entangled when you have this kind of an attitude. Therefore, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, so this Sanghanika Ramata, in Pali it is called Sanghanika Ramata, where you are delighted in too much of crowd, too many people, too many followers, then you are not going to have a peace of mind. As a result of that, you are not going to have a peaceful death. On the other hand, if you don't have such kind of a special desire or kind of a inner trait, thinking that I should have so many followers, I should have so much of relatives, companions, etc., then you know how to manage yourself. You have your own independence. So you don't need to be attend to so many people's requirements, because you have your inner kind of solitude, so that can be maintained. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta mentioned, if one is one doesn't need to have such kind of a companionship, one is quite independent, so that is also an important point to have a peaceful death. And some similar point is highlighted in the as the number 5, that is delights in bonding. Now here the point is, it is not that you are having so many people or so many companions, but rather you may have a couple of them, but the point is you are too much attached to them. So always you want to talk with them, always you want to have some sort of communication, and you are very much like kind of having a intimate relationship. So that is also detrimental, because even though you don't have so many, you have a couple of them, but you are maintaining very close relationship, and always you want to talk to them, always you are dependent on them, and you always have to inform them what you are doing, etc., etc. So that is also not helping to have kind of a solitude. So therefore, on the other hand, you may have a couple of friends, doesn't matter, and they are Kalyana Mittas, and you know when to talk, and what is the limit of talking, what's the limit of engagement. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta highlights Asansaggaramata. So you like to have kind of a seclusion. You like to have kind of a situation where you are with yourself. You have some time for yourself. And at that time you are aware of yourself and what is really going on in the mind, and you are able to understand yourself and what are the difficulties in yourself, what are the skills in yourself, what are the weaknesses in yourself. So this kind of introspection really requires so much of time to understand yourself, to be with yourself, to feel yourself. Therefore, if one is having such, then he is going to have a good death. Now, number 6. This is the one that we want to come to and to highlight. So that is the delight in vendor proliferation. That's the sixth point. Actually, when we consider the order of these 6 points, we can see as we are going forward, the points highlighted are so subtle, but they are the most critical in a way. So sometimes, even though we are not talking, even though there are no companions, even though we are not maintaining any kind of intimate relationship, but still, are our minds silent? Is it possible to take a rest in our mind? So, say for example, you got a vacation and you are going to a particular place, and at that time, say you are going to a remote place. And sometimes, what people do is they are carrying several books, probably they may even carry a laptop, thinking that they are going to have a rest. But they may start to browse the internet and going through YouTube, and maybe read a book, read a newspaper. So still occupied. Now it is not the kind of a proper kind of a rest in a way. Even though the body has some sort of a seclusion, still your mind is not properly secluded. You are not in a proper solitude. Now, what is the way of having solitude to the mind? Now there are three types of solitude Buddha mentioned: Kaya Viveka, Chitta Viveka, Upadhi Viveka. Kaya Viveka is something that you can be away from the crowd. You can have a kind of a secluded life. Suppose you are going to a remote place, then we can say, okay, you got the Kaya Viveka. Now you are not engaged with so many activities, rather you are free. You don't have anything to do. You got the Kaya Viveka, bodily seclusion. How about Chitta Viveka? Now, Chitta Viveka, in order to have Chitta Viveka, definitely you have to develop the mindfulness. You have to develop the mind in a way. Now, otherwise, mind is always occupied. You are thinking about the past, you are thinking about the future, and so many other activities assigned to you are planning about them. So, likewise, even though your body is secluded, your mind is not secluded. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned during this long sansaric journey, so we always had a companion. It is not your wife, or it is not your boss, or it is not your friend, it is not your husband, if it is not your child, but it is the craving. Tanha dutiyo puriso digamadhana sansara. So there Buddha mentioned, so this tanha, craving, operates as the companion. So we always carry or always be with this companion. And we are always trying to satisfy this companion. So this companion is all, or the partner is always asking something. I need to watch a movie, then you are watching. I want to listen to music, then you are listening. I want to eat something delicious, then you are eating. Then again he is asking, okay, this is not delicious enough, I want to have something more, then you are trying to fulfill. I want to again watch a movie, then you are watching a movie. I want to watch a cricket match, then you are watching the cricket match. Likewise, so many requests are coming from the inner partner, inner companion, and you are continuously trying to fulfill those requests. Throughout the samsara, this is what we have done. Still, we are continuing it. There is no end. So, whatever the request coming from inner side, or inner self, this craving, so never ends. So that is the problem. So we are continuously trying to fulfill those requests, those urges, those demands, but still we couldn't fulfill it. Now, craving, therefore, is in a way kind of controlling ourselves. Those are In a way, it is not we are bound to so many external factors, rather our own inner kind of craving continuously bother us, and we are kind of victims, slaves to that craving. Now, as a result of that, it is asking so many things, and we are going to fulfill them, and mind is not going to be peaceful. Now, in order to have a peaceful mind, or the seclusion of mind, චිත්ත විවේක. So somehow these say inner traits or these hindrances have to be subsided. How to do it? One can say it is through the samatha meditation or vipassana meditation. Samatha meditation, where you are trying to take a wholesome object and you are trying to keep your attention there, and again you are trying to keep your attention onto this very simple wholesome object. So the importance of this wholesome object is it does not pollute the mind. It does not agitate the mind. Instead, it is calming down the mind. Instead, it is sort of freeing the mind from various sensual desires. So kamachanda, sensual desire, can be slowly subsided when your mind is getting concentrated. And on the other hand, in order to avoid sleepiness, sluggishness, drowsiness, so you have to have some sort of a meditation object, and again your mind has to be applied to that. Say for example, you are using anapanasati, so the meditation object is the breath, so continuously breathing is happening. Now you have to again and again apply your mind to the in-breath, again and again you have to apply the mind to the out-breath. So there's something subtle to continue, so that does not allow the mind to go to sleep. So your sluggishness of the mind, drowsiness, sleepiness, laziness, so that will be eliminated, and that defilement or that hindrance can be avoided when we are having this kind of applied thought. And on the other hand, once we apply the thought, we are closely examining that thought. So we are examining whether the breath is long, whether the breath is short, whether the breath is warm, whether the breath is cool. So likewise, we are closely examining the object. So that helps to eradicate vichikicca, that is the doubt. So when we are engaged with so many doubts, again mind is occupied. Now by closely examining the meditation object, primary object, so we are able to avoid that doubts, so that we are become firm, we are becoming kind of, mind becomes stable, sure about what's really happening. So the given object is a subtle object, and we are now fairly concentrated on it, and again we are again and again applying our mind to it, and again we are continuously examining it. As a result of that, now another defilement, another hindrance, that is the vichikicca, also subsided. Now when you are getting somewhat familiar with this process, and you are now developing a skill to continue this process, then you understand, okay, it can be done, and you are getting somewhat happy, you are getting somewhat fulfilled, because you know how to tackle them, how to tackle various defilements now. As a result of that, when these main hindrances are subsided, so mind becomes somewhat happy, somewhat peaceful. So this peacefulness, this happy feeling, this contented feeling is quite opposite to ill will. So ill will can be subsided when the mind is happy. Piti. Piti is the rupture. So it starts with a simple amount of happiness, some amount of contentment, and it can be developed to the level of rupture or piti. So when the mind is happy and rupturous kind of a situation, then you don't have any kind of an ill will. So ill will also can be subsided. And when you feel happy and quite satisfied, that indicates that you are going through some sort of a sukha or happy state. So when the body is happy, or rather when the body feels comfortable, feeling at ease, mind is also somewhat satisfied and contented, happy, then there is no way of going to the past and regretting about something has happened. And again, no, the mind does not want to become restless, because internally now everything is happy, everything is in a good situation. Because the mind becomes restless, only it doesn't have inner peace. Now, when, say for example, if your own house doesn't have peace, then you are going outside. Say when you are coming at home, if your children, if your wife, if your husband, they all are welcoming you, and there's a very peaceful environment in the house, then you love to be at home. But the opposite, if when you are coming at home, if there are many, so many troubles and so everything is cluttered, and then you don't like to feel at home. Then you are going away. That is why people going away and going to, they become drunk and all these sort of problems. Similar situation at our mind. So internally, if the mind is happy, so then mind doesn't have to go outside seeking for happiness, because happiness is available now. Happiness is already available inside. So it has found an internal happiness. So when this internal happiness is available, so the restlessness is also not going to happen, because internally the mind is quite satisfied, some amount of happiness is available, so he is basically established or associating such internal happiness. So as a result of that, Uddaccha Kukkuccha, restlessness and the regrets are not going to happen. Now the mind is quite peaceful, happy, and in a good situation. Now, as we are continuing like this, the mind becomes fairly concentrated. So, when the mind is concentrated, that indicates it does not want to go outside seeking various types of pleasures. So, the kamachanda, sensual desires, are subsided, and because the mind is quite concentrated. So, these meditative qualities, sometimes we call them as jhana factors, are quite opposite to hindrances. So when we are engaging our minds again and again to an wholesome object, so that is called the vitakka, applied mind, which is against the svatantopa. Then when we are examining the object, primary object, very carefully, then it is quite sure what is available there. So it cannot have any kind of a doubt at that time, because you are very sure. You know what is really going on. You are closely examining the behavior. As a result of that, so this close examination or the vichara is quite opposite to the doubt, vichikiccha. And similarly, when the mind is somewhat happy, satisfied, fulfilled, so that is going to have rapture, piti, that is opposite to the ill will. Then when your mind and the body feels happy, contented, so that is some sort of a sukha, happiness, that is quite opposite to restlessness and the regret. And when the mind is firm, fairly concentrated, stable, now it is not moving, it does not want to go out and find pleasure. So that is quite opposite to the sensual desires. So the concentration, ekaggata, is opposite to sensual desire. So likewise, these meditative qualities, as we develop in our mind, those actually helps to subside various defilements, various hindrances. Now this is called the peace of mind. This is called the chitta viveka, or the seclusion of the mind. Now when it comes to the third one, that is the upadhi viveka, that actually requires fair amount of vipassana. That actually requires fair amount of, say, cognitive development, or some deeper understandings, what is really going on inside the mind, what are the defilements sort of condition in the mind, what are the various thought patterns, and are there any inner traits. So all those subtle aspects has to be understood. So that requires fair amount of developing wisdom. So through the mindfulness, now first of all we establish mindfulness, and then once the mindfulness is well established, one has to examine closely what is really going on. That actually triggers the insights or the wisdom. So that helps to have thorough understanding of the situation. Yatha bhuta jnana dassana. So when mind has such thorough understanding, that leads to some sort of a dispassion, because our minds are so attached, because we don't know really what is there. internal kind of ignorance is available. But as we are developing wisdom, so that ignorance will be eliminated and we are going to have a fair amount of wisdom. So that wisdom helps to eliminate this sort of ignorance. And as a result of that, your attachment or grasping going to be reduced. Now as we continue like this, so the how different defilements are arising, how they are, sometimes we are sort of feeding or strengthening, and what are the mechanisms available to remove those defilements. Now this is in a way kind of an exploration. So different suttas explain by the Buddha to handle these defilements and how to overcome them. Now you are practicing them practically. So this is the way ultimately we are able to keep the mind free from defilements, and even the defilements will be uprooted. They are not going to arise again. So that sort of a fairly high kind of a purification only happen at the wisdom level. So that is called the Upadhi Viveka. So when such Viveka, Kaya Viveka, Chitta Viveka, Upadhi Viveka is available, then actually we can say mind is quiet, mind is peaceful, inner silence is there. Now therefore, this even though we are not talking with someone, even though we are not engaged with some activity, even though we are not sleeping, even though we are not having any close relationship with another person, still, if our mind is not peaceful, if there is ongoing inner chatter available, if there is some sort of rumination available, so that means we haven't yet found the noble kind of seclusion. So there's a interesting another sutta called Bhaddekaratta Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned, so when the mind is not associating various past incidents and again not associating the future, say planning and all these things, and again not attached with the present moment with wisdom, so then such a kind of a person one can say as a Bhaddekaratta, who really like the noble seclusion. Now while one has noble seclusion, then probably one can understand, okay, mind has now freed, there is nothing to hold, nothing to grasp, and mind can maintain that freedom. Suppose that you practice say vipassana meditation and you are able to understand various defilements, and even you understood how things are arising and passing away, and you understood how impermanent they are, inconstant they are, and how unsatisfactory they are, and again how they are without your control. So those three characteristics, universal characteristics, suppose you understood. As a result of that, now mind is letting go with all the grasping. And suppose you are able to maintain a non-grasping mind, unattached mind, dispassionate mind for a time, for a, say 5 minutes. And suppose now you are improving it to 10 minutes. Suppose now you are increasing it to 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Suppose you are able to maintain that for 30 minutes, for example. But while you are maintaining, there may be a little amount of effort required to suppress the inner urge. So there is a kind of an internal urge coming out to do something. So this is something probably you might have experienced. So even though now mind is completely free from defilements or some sort of say rough kind of defilements, hindrances, but internally does not really feel contented. Now there is no sensual desire, there is no ill will, there is no huge amount of regret, or there is no any laziness, there are no doubts, but a little amount of agitation could be available. Because you are, I mean, in order to overcome that, you are required to have some amount of effort. But how to overcome even that sort of agitation? So that requires, in a way, further amount of practice. So Buddha mentioned this is called vimuttatta titang titassa na paritassati. So once the mind is still, there is no agitation at all, and you are completely satisfied, feeling fulfilled, feeling utterly contented. So that actually requires a fair amount of practice, because we as human beings always have this urge to do something, as we discussed as the very first matter. We always want to talk with someone. We always want to think something. So these kind of very subtle inner urges are internally available. Now, we have to recognize these internal urges, and rather than feeding them, we have to slowly let them go. Actually, in order to recognize these subtle urges, first of all, we need to have a kind of a free mind. That mind is free from obsessive thinking, proliferation, and you are experiencing some amount of peace in the mind. But why can't we maintain that peace? Why this inner silence is not yet quite stable? Because of those little urges available in the mind. Still, some amount of, say, anusaya, hidden tendencies or latent tendencies are available in the mind. So they are sort of pinching. They are, in a way, disturbing. They are triggering some kind of action into the mind. So as a result of that, mind getting agitated. Now these agitations has to be properly observed. So while we are maintaining that peace of mind, so these little urges are coming, and we have to accept that, okay, there is a kind of an urge. So mind is asking to look at something. Mind is asking to give a call to someone. Mind is asking to look at a paper. Mind is asking to, say, drink something. Mind is asking to do something. So likewise, there's a little urges coming, and we have to recognize them and has to let go of them. So likewise, slowly overcoming these different defilements actually requires time. So this is all actually a part of Upadhi Viveka, where you are understanding these subtle tendencies in our minds, and if we are able to overcome them, then inner silence is available. So even, I mean, now there are certain very beautiful suttas. So Buddha mentioned, even though some Muni is a sage, even though sometimes he is talking, Buddha mentioned internally he is silent. So this appear like very difficult to understand. Now actually Buddha, as the say supreme Muni, supreme sage, so he has preached so much of Dhamma, but talking externally does not disturb his inner silence. So that's the beauty. So internally he is silent. Depending on the situation, depending on the circumstance, he is now preaching some amount of Dhamma. So these are, in a way, very interesting guidelines we can understand from Buddha's teaching. And this sixth point, where one is not delighted in mental proliferation, even though we have that urge, so that sort of a trait that always want to think, even though there are no other activities, we want to think, we want to occupy the mind. So that urge, that trait has to be recognized and slowly eliminated. So the opposite, if one is having kind of delights in Nibbana, delights in a very peaceful mind, to be free from mental proliferation, then Buddha mentioned, or Venerable Sariputta mentioned, he is going to have a peaceful mind. Now there are two verses mentioned at the end of this sutta. So Venerable Sariputta mentioned, the creature devoted to proliferation, who is delighted with proliferation, has failed to attain Nibbana, the unsurpassed security from bondage. Papanchabirato mago. So maga is a Pali term to represent creature. So you can understand, whoever is delighted in papancha has put to a very lower level, because he is like a creature. He is not really having understood the Buddha's teaching. So the opposite is mentioned from the second verse. If one has abandoned proliferation, and he is delighted in have a mind which is free from proliferation, free from conceptual proliferation. And who finds delight in non-proliferation? Nippapancha paderato. He likes to maintain a mind which is completely silent. It is not kind of suppressed kind of a silence, but rather through the wisdom various defilements are understood and slowly they are eradicated, and those inner urges are also properly attended. As a result of that, now he is trying to maintain some sort of inner silence which is completely free from conceptual proliferation. Aradayiso nibbanam yogakkhemam anuttaram. Now he is in a way inviting Nibbana. So he has prepared the environment, he has prepared the seat. Now Nibbana may coming because the environment is suitable. He is maintaining a conducive environment to have a peaceful mind. Yogakkhemam anuttaram, which is the unsurpassed security from bondage. So with that note, actually this sutta finish. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to turn our attention to question and answers.
So Bhante, one question that I received, It says, "Dear Bhante, sometimes we have to act while talking with our friends. Don't know what to answer when they start gossiping. Please advise how to face this mindfully."
Yeah, actually, this is something that we have to be tactful in a way. So we have to maintain the relationship. At the same time, we have to maintain inner silence as well. Now, at the beginning, it's good to have, some sort of seclusion, even with the sacrification of these friends. Because at the beginning, you require a fair amount of time to develop yourself. But the practice helps you to quickly gain that inner silence. Say, for example, at the beginning, say you are developing mindfulness, but with little disturbance, you are breaking it or you are losing it. But later, as you further develop mindfulness, you are able to retain that mindfulness. Even though various disturbances are happening, you can quickly establish mindfulness. Sometimes we call it as resilience. So this resilience is going to increase. And now there may be various disturbances available from the outside, and you may have to engage with so many activities, you may have to talk with someone, but it does not really harm your inner silence. So even if it harms to some extent, you can quickly regain, you can quickly re-establish. So therefore, at the beginning, it is true that one has to have a fair amount of seclusion in order to develop mindfulness and to develop wisdom. But later, you can slowly come back to the typical routine and you can see, is it possible to maintain the typical or mundane type of routine? Are there any still glitches happening? So are there any difficulties still available? So if there are still difficulties available, that indicates that still there are something to develop. So internally, I am not yet stable. There are certain situations disturbing me. There are certain people, so their association really disturbs my inner silence. So that has to be recognized. And if possible, we can avoid them. So Buddha actually highlighted that as well. I mean, if you consider Sabbasana Sutta, so there is a very important aspect called Parivajjana Pahatamba. So there Buddha mentioned, so if you know very well, this person is not a good person and he is always putting me onto the wrong side and he is giving a wrong example, and my inner silence, my wisdom, my faith, my effort are all going to destroy because of this association. He is a Papa Mitta. Then Buddha mentioned, so please avoid him. Don't go to associate. And that is one aspect. But on the other hand, if you are associating a person, he is not a bad person, but he is a good person, but still how to maintain the distance or how to know the limit. That is also important to understand. So while we are maintaining, doing some sort of conversation,
So as I mentioned at the beginning, it may really disturb our practice, it might even disturb the mindfulness, but later, slowly, we are able to maintain mindfulness even though we are talking, even though we are engaged with some sort of a conversation. Yeah.
Thank you, Mante. For the next question, I'd like to invite Kumudini.
Hello, Saranai Bante. My question is regarding the entire talk you were giving. You were saying that we have to establish mindfulness and then also yoniso manasikara. At what stage do you start doing that? Is it when we are focusing on our breath and we notice the in and out breathing, whether it's long, short, warm, whatever, and then supposing we get a thought coming into our mind or something like that, do we go into that thought and go analyzing that thought, or we just put that aside and go back to our object of meditation?
Yeah, both are correct. Both approaches are correct. Actually, both are encouraging yoniso manasikara. So typically, yoniso manasikara means that the mind is maintained at the surface level, not penetrating, not going inside, not examining, rather satisfied at the outside look, outside appearance. But on the other hand, when we are examining very closely, then we are encouraging that search. We are encouraging that examination, that we are encouraging the investigation. So that is the side of yoniso manasikara. Now we begin that after we establish mindfulness, because at the beginning, when the mind is wavering and mind is jumping to past, future, this and that, so then we can't properly examine the present moment. But once fair amount of mindfulness is established, so that indicates, okay, mind is now somewhat stable and not jumping here and there. Now it can maintain its attention for a considerable period of time onto a selected object, say the breath. Now that is the establishment of mindfulness. So once that mindfulness is fairly established, now we have to inquire to that object, to inquire to that primary object. So that is that examination, that investigation is the beginning of yoniso manasikara. And on the other hand, as you mentioned, suppose you are now, say, competent in doing that. Now there is a thought also coming. Now, when the mindfulness is established and you are able to closely examine the bodily phenomena, that indicates some amount of clear comprehension is available with you. So you can try even look at the thought. You don't need to completely neglect the thought and come back to the breath. So that is required at the early stages because you don't know yet how to handle the thought. But when you are confident, actually you can see whether I can understand what's really going on in the mind. So in a way, you are slowly practicing Jittanupassana, slowly going to the practice Vedanupassana. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual process. So as we continue Kayanupassana, so there are the necessary skills, necessary qualities required to practice Jittanupassana is slowly building up. So when you are examining thought, then there also you are examining it. So rather than simply being carried away by the thought, now you are looking at it very closely. So that is also part of yoniso manasikara.
Bhante, the important thing here is to do it at the right time. Because if you were to do this earlier on, it would be like mental proliferation, don't you think? And you won't get concentration established.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Earlier in the sense?
Like if you, when you first start to meditate at a sitting, this has got to be done when you have established your mindfulness.
Yes.
Because if you start letting your thought, mind go to all of the thoughts that come in before you establish your mindfulness, it will be like proliferation.
Yes, yes, exactly. That is,
right.
I mean, because you are not going to be successful because not enough mindfulness and clear comprehension is available. You have very weak mindfulness.
Right.
Yeah, actually that warning Buddha mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta, there Buddha mentioned Naham Bhikkave Muttasatissa Asampajanasa Anapanasati Samadhin Padam. So what he mentioned there is, for a person who is with wavering mindfulness and who doesn't have clear comprehension, sampajanya, I do not recommend Anapanasati meditation at the Chittanupassana level.
I see.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. So in order to have proper Chittanupassana, first of all, that is why we encourage to develop mindfulness using Kayanupassana. So then the yogi start to have some practical experience. He know what is mindfulness. Then he knows slowly what is this clear comprehension, and slowly he is developing those skills. So once he develop them to a certain extent, he can try Chittanupassana.
Bhante, another thing is the Chittanupassana. Should you go deep into that thought and investigate why am I having such a thought and the origin of it and the reason for it, or how do we handle that?
Yeah, so those are possible. So that is why when we come to the Dhammanupassana level, when such thought is present, you can understand, okay, it is present. When it is not available, you understand, okay, it is not present. Similarly, you are able to have a mind which is free from that thought. While maintaining that kind of a free mind, okay, now this particular thought, this hindrance is now appearing. So you can clearly recognize the beginning of that hindrance. Then the availability of that hindrance. And since you are not promoting it, now it is starting to fade away. Now you understand the fading away part of that as well. So likewise, so as you mentioned, so the clear recognition, very close examination is possible as you are improving. That is maintained in the Dhammanupassana. Yeah, Dhammanupassana section.
It was that time.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Very helpful.
Then for the next question, I'd like to invite
Chita Devi. Thank you, Jennifer. I have a few short queries. The first one is, you said it's from the Book of Sixes. What number is it, Bhante, the sutta?
Sutta, this is number 14. Now, it has actually several sections. It is in the first 50, and this is the number 14th of first 50.
Number 50 and then go to the first 14. Is that what it is?
Yes. Actually, you have to go to the Book of Sixes. Yes. And this is the 14th sutta.
So then you said number 50?
No, this is included in the first 50. There are another second 50, third 50. So likewise, this is grouped.
Right. So this is sutta number 14, right?
Sutta number 14, yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Now the few other things. Now you spoke about the solitude and seclusion. Now, mm-hmm. Solitude is being on our own, right?
Yeah, that is the bodily seclusion.
And the seclusion is we have inner silence, but outside we can be with the crowds or talking or whatever, right? Is that right?
That is also possible. I mean, when someone is developed, so that's what I mentioned for a Buddha, even though he is preaching, so he may be experiencing inner silence.
So that is what we should be trying to achieve, and we can only achieve that through meditation. Is that a correct statement to make?
Yeah, we can say so. Because, I mean, in order to understand inner silence, you need fair amount of mental cultivation. Because even at the level of, subsiding of defilements, hindrances, probably you can experience that inner silence. But still, that is a kind of a maintained situation. That is a suppressed kind of a situation, inner silence. Because hindrances are there. You haven't uprooted them. But temporarily you have subsided them. As a result of that, you are experiencing inner silence. But when it comes to Buddha's situation, so he has completely uprooted the defilements. So he doesn't need to subside anything. He doesn't need to suppress anything because all the roots are not available. So in the hindrances, sorry, the inner tendencies, latent tendencies are completely removed. So as a result of that, even though externally, suppose someone is blaming him, someone is praising him, some sort of situations are happening, but internally there are no causes to agitate the mind. So that's a different situation in a way. So one can say that is the goal of the practice.
But will people at a lower level also be able to have a fair amount of inner silence or not really?
Can. That's what I mean. So as one develops vipassana, so there may be glitches. I mean, if someone is blaming or disturbing, there may be a little jerk, but still
yes.
That person can quickly recover.
Mm-hmm.
So the resilience is developing.
So that has to be improved by quality meditation, not just ordinary meditation, having proliferating minds, but we have to go into a deeper level to be able to attain those levels, right, Pante?
Deeper level in the sense now, I mean, we need to understand what are the causes making the mind agitated. So the causes are the defilements, raga dosa moha. So if we are able to remove those causes, then there is no need of worrying. So that is why, I mean, we can say even at the death, so that may be a very difficult situation. Still the inner causes are not available to agitate the mind. So that's a kind of a beautiful situation in a way. Now I have given a simple example one day, I don't know to you. Say for example, you have a water bottle. Now this is, if it is with lot of impurities, and probably you can keep that bottle for some time without shaking it, without moving it, for after a couple of days, okay, all these impurities will get sedimented. So probably you may have a clear water. But still, problem is there. Now, this is the typical mind seclusion or chitta viveka, where the defilements are subsided. They are sedimented, like they are sleeping. As a result of that, as a result of that, the surface mind appear like quite peaceful. But suppose you shake the water bottle, now again everything become kind of a turmoil. But suppose you are able to completely remove all these impurities, then you have very pure water. Either you keep it stable, or even if you continue to shake, still it is pure water.
Yes, understood. So one has to be at a spiritual level, has to be fairly high to have that level. Mean ordinary people like us, it's a different situation, but we can only keep trying.
Yes. No, that's the thing. I mean, we need to understand these causes, we need to understand these defilements. By knowing and seeing, only we can slowly remove them. So, I mean, if we are ignorant about them, if we don't even notice them, then we can't address them. So, that is why janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayang vadam. So, Buddha categorically mentioned, once you know, once you see those inner tendencies, once you know, once you see these defilements, then you can simply remove them or let them go, other than feeding them, strengthening them. So then slowly they become weaker and weaker.
Yes, got that one thing.
Yeah.
And the last question, if I may ask you, is, you know, in the meditation, you have gone through this with us, the Satipatthana Sutta. In the refrain, now the Buddha talks about Ajata Bahidya and Udevaya. Now, following the previous lady's question also, now you said we should be going deeper into these things. So, in the case of the Udevaya, I heard a talk where the monk said that we should go through five steps with the five aggregates and have 25 investigations. Now, like for instance, he says when we see the Udaya and the Vaya, this is because of ignorance, because of tanha, because of the karmic sankhara, because of ahara, and because of birth. So should, is that a good idea, Bhante? I was not sure, that's why I want to clarify that with you.
Yeah, so that is actually commentary explanation. So in the commentary, it is mentioned that five reasons or five causes. Five causes, and then applied to all those five aggregates, then it becomes 25 ways. I mean, it does not come in the typical suttas, by the way. If you investigate Sutta Pitaka, so nowhere such kind of an explanation given. But later on, the commentator has introduced some more aspects, and even to the Paticca-samuppada, they are introducing this kind of past lives, future life, and all these things. But when it comes to suttas, so they are more into the, very practical, very to the point, and talking to the present moment, and therefore practically, suppose you are experiencing arising and passing away of the breath. Now here it is not the typical in breath and out breath. Suppose you are keeping your attention to in breath and out breath, then later you are coming to a situation where you can't distinguish whether it is in breath or out breath.
Yeah.
And simply what you are experiencing is some sort of knowing, some sort of feeling.
Knowing.
Then you understand, okay, this is arising and passing away. That's all you can understand. Because it is so subtle. So at that time, can you attribute it to karma? So that attribution probably can happen later, not during that moment. So at that moment, you can simply observe how these are vulnerable, how these are very quickly arising and passing away. So that is a very, very close examination, very subtle examination. But after that, once you come out of that situation and once you look back, why is it happening? Then it comes, we can say it is coming under the chintame jnana, where you can attribute it to, okay, what are the causes to this to happen? I mean, causes also probably one can understand in a subtle way. So these feelings may be happening because of contact. You can come to that level. One can recognize very subtle contact which is causing the feeling. That is also possible. So that is why, cause, the dependent origination, Paticca-samuppada, is so subtle. I mean, you can't think while you are experiencing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that we just observe what we are seeing, what we are experiencing only, not trying to go into depths, and later on when we actually finish the meditation, we can do a deep contemplation.
Exactly. That is possible. So that it may give you further understanding and some sort of confidence. Okay, these are also possible causes, because the causes like karma, we can't actually understand. One can say because now we have born because of a very good karma. As a result of that, we are continuing our life. So that engage fair amount of wholesome karma, and therefore breath is also have a relationship to that karma. We can argue. We can argue like that.
But what I'm hearing is that when we are doing the meditation, we just observe what we are experiencing, and maybe you said investigate a little bit. You told the previous lady we can investigate a little bit.
Can. Yeah. That close examination is free from thoughts in a way. Now you are not trying to borrow any knowledge here. Rather you are very quietly examining, so that close examination might reveal some understanding. So that may quickly arouse some sort of an insight. That is valid. That is a good thing. But you don't need to borrow that book knowledge and try to impose into this situation. Then it is wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it is wrong.
Because we might then distract ourselves with that.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Then we are actually putting book knowledge in the front of the experiential knowledge.
Yeah.
We are in a way polluting our experiential knowledge with the borrowed knowledge. So that is not recommended actually.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next question that I received, Dejawat Sanai Swami Mahansa. General question, is there a difference between Yoniso Manasikara and Dhamma Vijaya, Dhamma investigation? And how do we best apply these throughout our daily life with gratitude and metta?
Yoniso Manasikara, Dhamma Vijaya, all these are parts of the wisdom. Now, wisdom have different levels. So, at the very early stages, we can say, okay, we are having some sort of an object onto which that we have established mindfulness. Now, we are examining that object. So, sometimes we call it as sampajanya, sati sampajanya. So, we are trying to clearly comprehend that object. So, that is the seed of wisdom. And that has the attributes of Yoniso Manasikara, because rather than simply satisfied telling it, okay, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. Now the close examination is there, so we are trying to go to the roots, go to the causes, and go to the very, say, subtle aspects. So therefore Yoniso Manasikara attributes are also there. And later it is further developing to the level of, indriya. Faculty. Now you have a panya faculty, panya indriya. So sometimes you understand, okay, today my wisdom is so sharp, everything is quickly understood, I have some sort of penetrative knowledge. So there you understand, okay, there is a kind of faculty called wisdom, there's a kind of a skill called wisdom. And then it is further growing to the level of bala, to the level of power. So even sometimes mind is going to various concepts, still you know, okay, nothing to worry, I can simply apply wisdom. So these are merely concepts. So you are not worried. So that kind of stability of the mind, confidence of the mind is available because of the wisdom power. That is called panya bala. And then you come to the level of saptabhujjanga. There you come across Dhamma Vichaya. So Dhamma Vichaya is via the investigation. So all these factors you can investigate. So the investigation is available throughout, but now it has come to the more enlightenment factor level. So it's a kind of a gradual growth. So Dhamma Vichaya, investigation, then the Panya, Panyindriya, Panya Bala, clear comprehension. So all these are different shades of panya, different shades of wisdom, we can say. What's the next question he asks? Jennifer, any other part to that question, or did I answer it totally?
Yes, the answer is complete. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, yeah.
And then I believe this may be the last question. Udenka, may unmute.
Teruvan Sannai, Bhante.
So the inner silence, my question is, the inner silence can be kept when the thoughts are coming in too. Is that right? And then some thoughts you feel you're not touching the thoughts, and then it's moving away when you look at it. And then it's just as if like you're forgetting things. Is that right?
Yeah, we can say so. I mean, kind of a simile, we can say the sky is available, kind of a clear sky is available, but time to time there are clouds coming. But cloud does not, I mean, if they are not staying there for a long time, if they are simply passing by, later again the clear sky is available. Similarly, so our mind is also somewhat like that. So the inner silence is somewhat like the clear sky. But time to time, various thoughts popping up. But if we are not feeding them, if we are not identifying with them, if we are not encouraging them, so quickly they will fade away. So even when they are present, still the inner silence is available. We can say, we can argue like that, because there is no huge disturbance happen to the mind because of this subtle thought. But but when we start to strengthen them, then probably they might disturb us.
Yes, there's a variation of those, both of that. I can see that.
Yeah, variation in the sense, what do you mean?
Sometimes you're strengthening it, sometimes it passes by.
Yes.
And sometimes the mindfulness quickly gets established.
Correct, correct.
And it just vanishes off immediately.
Correct, that's right. So when the mindfulness is well established and we are fairly in the wisdom side, then we are not promoting these thoughts, we are not feeding them. So as a result of that, they quickly pass away. But there are certain other situations our mindfulness is somewhat weak, and those thoughts may be producing some amount of pleasure, and we also like that pleasure, then we start to feed them. Then ultimately they might disturb our inner silence. So, I mean, it's a matter of selection, it's a matter of choice. So if we are able to maintain our mindfulness properly, and if we are able to maintain very good wisdom that we are not promoting any thoughts coming in, and we understand, okay, they might disturb the inner silence, and we are simply allow them to fade away, then we can enjoy inner silence for a long time.
So, Bhante, can there be a thought there that is very strong, and but your mindfulness is carrying through the thought? You can see, but there's sometimes some thoughts are unstoppable, but you see it, like you're seeing it, not like you're not aware of it.
Right. Possible, possible. Because, I mean, that's why, I mean, though sometimes there are inner urges coming. Okay, there may be greed, there may be kind of an anger. So, I mean, we can't simply overcome them overnight, within a couple of days. I mean, these are something inherent to the mind for a long, long time. So they have to again and again come to the surface of the mind, and we have to again and again watch them, be mindful of them. And as a result of being, as a result of being mindful, so they start to slowly fade away. So as you mentioned, there may be a situation, it might grow to a certain extent. But we can be face to face with it without giving up. And while maintaining our inner silence, but they are trying to, almost, I mean, they have penetrated, but we are not really giving up, then ultimately they may fade away.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay,
Sanai.
Therwan Sanai.
It seems like, Kumudini, do you have one more question?
Yes, please, if there is time, it's a quick question. May I ask it? Or there's no time? Is there no time?
I can have, but you have to excuse Jennifer.
Oh. Okay, Bhante, I will be quick.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, Bhante, when I sit to meditate, sometimes I experience piti sukha quite often. But I don't know what to do after that.
No, just enjoy. Just I mean, one approach is you are, I mean, rather than identifying with them, rather than go into it, you can little step back from it and look at it objectively. I mean, this is piti sukha. This is a part of feelings. That is what mentioned by the Buddha in the Anapanasati Sutta. When you are experiencing different kind of pleasures, pain, so happiness, so just merely look at, so this is happiness, this is pleasure, this is pain. So then it becomes Vedana Anupassana. Rather than you are trying, I mean, typically what happens is when Piti Sukha arise, probably we want to hold it, we want to have it some more, and we want to claim it as this is my happiness, so my pleasure. Rather doing that, you step back and look at it objectively.
And continue with the meditation.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you. It was Sarana.
Yeah, Sarana.
Thank you for taking the question.
So now we have come to the end of the sutta teaching session. So today we have discussed some Dhamma, and again we learned something from the Anguttara Nikaya. So with that we are able to accumulate some merits. Let's share these merits with all the beings with the recitation of traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.